Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everybody. I know there's a lot of companies reporting this week, so I really appreciate everybody taking time to join us to talk about H&T's results for last year and where we are as a business and where we go from here. I am going to just talk through a little bit of background to H&T and a bit of background to the year and our strategic priorities. Di will take you through the numbers, and then I'll finish up looking at the outlook at the end. A few people have been asking me about the picture on the front of the presentation, actually. So that's our new store in Gloucester, which opened in the third quarter of last year. When we open a store, we second almost invariably, actually, a manager to the new store to make sure it gets off to a really good start. And in this case, the lady in the picture is Anchor, who runs our business in Cardiff, who we seconded to Gloucester for a couple of months when it first opened, and she did a great job. So that's the picture on the front. So some of you will probably know H&T better than others. So for those that don't know us well, we are a consumer-facing business, stores-based, although we have a growing online retail presence, with a network at the end of the year of 278 stores. It's currently 281. Our ambition is to make pawnbroking a more widely accepted and valued financial service after probably two or three generations of it not being front of mind. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. We are the UK's largest pawnbroker by some margin. We're also a leading retailer of new and pre-owned jewellery and watches. We do other things. Those other things are done mainly to bring footfall to our stores, albeit they are profitable in their own right. And there are strong market drivers, which I'll talk about shortly. Our key strategic focus is in four parts. First and foremost, our aim is to grow and broaden the core pawnbroking business. We are a balance sheet business. We are the largest pawnbroker, and growing that pawnbroking business, which underpins earnings, is our number one priority. Alongside that, we're investing in our store estate, both new and existing. We're investing in our technology and our online platforms. And our aim is to increase operational leverage to improve the returns that we generate from an inflation aside, largely fixed cost base. So why invest in H&T? We are the clear market leader. We're just into our 128th year. We have a diversified product portfolio that we deliver through all of our stores, but overwhelmingly, we are the UK's largest pawnbroker, and that is our strategic focus. There is a structural growth opportunity for that in our view. First of all, by and large, our customers are borrowing a small sum over a short term. So our median loan size is £200. That means half our loans are for £200 or less. If you are somebody who needs or has a need to borrow a small sum over a short term, your options or your legitimate options are much more constrained than has been the case for many, many years. And that creates an opportunity for pawnbroking in general and for H&T in particular. We are also seeing increased demand from customers who are looking for larger loans. We don't lend to businesses. We only lend to private individuals, and the assets we take as security are the same. But people who are looking to use the pawnbroking service for the provision of working capital to their business, and I will talk a bit more about that later. As I say, we don't lend to businesses. We only lend to the individual. It's the individual that then uses the money for business purposes. But we are seeing an increase in that, and it was one of the rationales that underpinned the purchase of Maxcroft. There is growing demand for pre-owned jewellery and watches, and we believe we have further opportunities to expand the footprint. As a result of this, our aim is to deliver strong returns, pledge book underpinning earnings growth, leverage the fixed cost base, and work hard at the other things we do, which provides us with ancillary revenue. We have a target to achieve a sustainable post-tax ROE in the mid-teens across the cycle, and we have a progressive dividend policy with a minimum coverage requirement of 2x. We want to be a responsible citizen in the communities in which we operate, and one of the things we are seeing with pre-owned is a growing acceptance of the environmental and sustainability benefits that pre-owned brings. We believe our business model is also sustainable. Pledge lending collateral is almost always precious metal watches and jewellery, which is always under our control. There's no recourse to the borrower at any time, which is very different from other forms of lending. We have a strong control culture here, prudent underwriting policies, and very strong customer advocacy, of which we are very proud and actually very protective. So I'm not going to dwell on the numbers. Di's going to take you through the numbers, but hopefully this slide will show that we are making progress with all of the key returns and performance measures that we have in the business, whether that be net asset value, return on equity, earnings per share, dividend per share. The chart on the right tries to show revenue growth versus cost growth. An interesting thing about the blue line at the top, which is revenue growth, is it shows the seasonality of our business from first half to second half. The growth in the second half of 2023 in our revenues was less than we were anticipating, which was largely to do with Christmas retail trading. Like many retailers, we experienced a change in customers' buying behaviours, which we didn't anticipate. We have, however, reacted to, and our customers are telling us what they want us to be doing in terms of the inventory, and I'll be talking a bit about that later. On the cost front, at the half year, we said we would take very firm action on costs, which we did. We were able to keep cost inflation down to 11% for the full year. We are guiding to cost inflation in 2024, being broadly aligned with that, again, largely driven by the fact that almost two-thirds of our costs are people-related, and the increase in minimum wage is putting more cost inflation into that part of the P&L than may have been previously anticipated. We've been busy this year, aside from just growing the business. We've expanded the store estate, invested in new and existing stores. We've increased processing capacity by opening a second jewellery processing centre, actually adjacent to the existing one, that will make us more efficient and give us additional capacity. We integrated the websites, so the established 1897 brand has now been retired and everything is hubbed under an H&T website. We introduced click and collect for foreign currency. All of the above has helped us to increase customer numbers for pawnbroking, retail and foreign currency last year. A lot of work was done on funding last year. We've raised additional funding and we now have headroom to fund anticipated growth over at least the next 2 to 3 years. We strengthened and diversified the board. And in August, we implemented Consumer Duty, which was a significant body of work and training for our people, but we did it in August. And I'm very pleased with the way that that landed. I'm not going to dwell on this particular slide. I'll come back to this in the Q&A because people tend to be very interested in some store statistics. But what it shows, I think, is that revenue per store, pledge book per store, and profit per store are all rising, even though we're opening new stores. And it is also the case that we're able to negotiate significant reductions in rents. Last year, about 20% of our leases came up for review. Typically, in an individual case, we would get somewhere between 15 and 20% rent reduction at the point of renewal. So that's all I'm going to say for now. I'm going to hand over to Di, who is going to talk through the numbers.
Thank you very much, Chris, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to start this afternoon with the income statement and pull out some key highlights as we work through. I'm going to start with gross profit. Gross profit has seen a growth of 25% this year, with our core pawnbroking product contributing 71% of this growth. Our impairment charge, which is the next item on our income statement, includes two parts. The first being the uncollected interest on pledge loans that have defaulted. And the second component is the movement on the IFRS 9 provision. And I'll pick up IFRS 9 in more detail as we go through the balance sheet in the next slide. Cost control is a key focus for us. And as Chris mentioned, our costs grew 11% for the year. Our employee costs make up 60% of our cost base. And these costs have seen a 20% growth due to salary increases and the number of new hires that we have in our business. This translates to profit after tax growth of 42%, with an earnings per share increasing by 31% to 48.5p, and dividends per share increasing by 13% to 17p. If we now turn our attention to the balance sheet, our fixed assets grew with the investment of our capital expenditure in our stores, both new stores and existing stores, as well as our strategic investment in our IT technology platform during the year. In our working capital, our largest asset is our pledge book of £129 million. And this is made up of three parts. The principal value that we lent of £101 million, our accrued interest of £33 million, and that is offset by IFRS 9 provision of £6 million. This fair value of our pledge book of £129 million is slightly lower than the pledge book we referenced in our trading update in January. And this is due to the finalisation of our IFRS 9 provision workings, specifically with regards to the effective interest rate that we use for that model. The interest rates on our pledged loans and therefore our IFRS 9 calculation for the effective interest rate is high. So a relatively small move in this effective interest rate has the effect of moving the fair value of our pledge book. A detailed review of IFRS 9 model was undertaken during the course of this year with independent third-party consultants and along with our auditors. Through this review, it was highlighted that the risk of the pledge book is mitigated by the collateral that we hold. And this collateral that is held by us becomes our inventory when a pledge loan defaults. Therefore, the risk primarily relates to collateral, and this resides in the inventory in our balance sheet and not in the pledge loan balance. So provisions have been raised against the fair value of our inventory by an amount at least equal to the reduction in the IFRS 9 provision against the pledge book. So this moves the provision between line items on the balance sheet to reflect the provision where the risk resides. If I now move to the cash flow, our strategic decision to grow the business during the year has increased the use of our financing facilities, and we've ended the year with a net debt position of £32 million. We believe that these gearing levels are still modest for the group. The additional funding has been used primarily to grow our pledge book, to invest in our CapEx in our stores, and also to invest in the technology platforms. Our total funding facilities have increased in February 2024 to £85 million, and this provides us with sufficient headroom to support our medium-term growth ambitions. We've included more details on our funding facilities at the back of the slide deck in the annexure. If we look at our segmental results and start with our pawnbroking product, our pawnbroking product is the group's core product, and this contributes 71% to our gross profit. The pledge book grew by 28% for the year, with an increase in our new customers of 17%. The underlying metrics of our pledge book, which is our loan-to-value ratios, our redemption rates, and our margin, have remained consistent. And our mean loan values have increased slightly to £428, while the median value is £201. Borrowing demand by our customers continue to gather momentum, and we had a record lending month in the month of January 2024. Retail, Chris touched on briefly a little bit earlier, but to call out what we saw in December was that our customers changed their spending priorities. And this led to a shift in the sales mix as our customers wanted to buy lower priced items, which for us is predominantly our new items and our new jewelry, and these have lower margins. Notwithstanding, the retail sales throughout the year increased by 8%, with online sales growing by 65% to contribute 20% to our total sales value. Foreign currency transaction volumes increased by 18% during the year, with growth of slightly more than that at the beginning of 2024. Foreign currency continues to receive focus and attention as we've broadened the currencies that we offer in our stores, and we've launched our click and collect service in June. Looking at scrap, the one point I'd like to highlight on this slide relates to pawnbroking scrap. Pawnbroking scrap is the realization of the value of a collateral item that we held against a pledge loan that has defaulted. Therefore, in future periods, we will be including this particular segment in the results of the pawnbroking results segments as a recovery against the impairment charge. Then moving on to the last slide from myself as regards other services. The other services we offer to bring footfall to our stores, in particular, our money transfer partnership with Western Union. We are Western Union's largest customer by volume of transactions, and this alone brings 500,000 customers to our stores every year. I'll please hand back to Chris now.
Thanks, Di. So if I look at the two strategic priorities that we have other than in pledge book and operational gearing, it's the store estate technology. So we added 12 stores last year. We closed one and relocated two, 278 at the year end. I'm often asked whether the growth and the progress in the business is skewed to the south. And the answer to that is no. Actually, the growth is coming right across the geography over which we have stores, just as much actually in the north as in the south. One thing that is quite interesting is that the 70 stores that were acquired in 2019, part of the strategy in acquiring them was a belief that pawnbroking and retail could be grown in those stores. It has been and remains the case that those 70 stores are growing a bit more quickly on average than the portfolio as a whole. All of the stores that we've opened in the last 3 years either are or will be profitable on a run rate basis no later than the second year of operation. In some cases, they're profitable in year one. We've increased the pace of the refresh program of our stores. Now, this is not a refit, it's a refresh, redecoration, etc. We did 50 last year. We plan to do 50 this year. We think that that puts our store estate on a 5 to 6 year refresh cycle, which we think is about right for a business of our type. One of our challenges often is getting people to come through the door and enter our store for the first time, and they're more reluctant to do that if the store looks tired or a bit scruffy. So it's important that we look after the stores that we have, don't just focus entirely on new ones. There are, however, a number of opportunities that we see throughout the UK where there's a location we would like to have a store. We will always do that with an individual data-supported business case in each case, and we will do it in a controlled and measured way. We opened 12 stores last year. We would anticipate that we'll probably open somewhere between 8 and 12 this year. The main constraint on timing actually is we will only open a store if we can get one in exactly the location that we want to be in. As far as technology is concerned, we launched the integrated website this year, which has gone well. Very pleased with the progress we've made there. The implementation of our core IT platform into the stores through 2023, we put more functionality in. What that's doing is it's making the point of sale transaction process for customers easier and quicker. And that means that we can continue to grow our business and be a bit more efficient and therefore not need to increase the cost of running the business commensurate with the growth in transaction volumes. As regards the website, having merged the website, so the EST 1897 brand has now been retired and it's all hubbed under an H&T Halo brand. And that's, if you like, the entertainment deck of the ship. What we're now doing is working on the engine room, and the platform on which the website is built will be replaced in 2024 with a new one, which will enable us to further enhance the customer journey and the customer experience online. So lots of focus on our store estate and on the technology platform. So turning to the future of the business and the big drivers of the growth, our number one strategic priority is to grow and broaden the pawnbroking pledge book. That's our core product, and that is what underpins future earnings. As I said earlier, I think that demand from people needing to borrow a small sum over a short term when supply is severely constricted will continue to grow. And we are seeing increased demand from customers who are business owners who are looking to use the pawnbroking product for working capital. And I'll talk a bit about that in the context of Maxcroft in a minute, because that was one of the main drivers for acquiring that business. On the retail side, what we saw at Christmas was people spent less money. And in our case, that means they bought new items on which the margins are lower than pre-owned. What our customers tell us is that what they want is pre-owned because it's better value for money. So we are changing our inventory mix to ensure that we have a higher volume of items which are pre-owned, both jewellery and watches, but at lower price points. The attractiveness of that for us is that the margins are higher on pre-owned jewellery sales, and the market's been guided to some recovery in retail margins in 2024. A lot of that will be driven by mix, i.e. the shift back towards pre-owned, particularly at lower price points. Foreign currency, it took us longer to get momentum into the transaction volumes than we anticipated. That momentum is now coming. We grew 18% our transaction volumes in 2023 and 11% on revenues. In 2024, the first 2.5 months of this year, the growth is at least what it was year on year last year. So I'm pleased with the progress that we're making on foreign currency. Click and collect is helping to bring people to our stores, often for the first time. Interestingly, click and collect transaction volumes, are more roughly double what they are over the counter. And the cost base we've talked about, inflation aside, it is a primarily fixed cost base. Our job, therefore, is to make sure that we maximize the operational leverage to bring revenue through more quickly than cost growth. So I'm just going to finish by talking a bit about Maxcroft, which was a business that we acquired a few weeks ago. It's been there a long time, 40 years, in the same location. It was a husband and wife who owned the business, and they approached us originally about 18 months ago because they wanted to consider retirement, which is actually what they've done. All their employees have joined H&T, and we actually have a consultancy agreement with the previous owner for a while. Average loan sizes there are bigger than ours, and the reason for that is because they have a customer base. There are over 1,000 borrowing customers at that store, but a customer base that is made up significantly of business people. This is either self-employed or small business owners using the loan for working capital purposes. Now, we have those customers in H&T today. About 15% of our loan book by value is constituted of loans for £5,000 and above, often used for business purposes. The difference, though, is that each of our stores would probably have a handful, maybe more than a handful, but not a huge volume of such customers, bearing in mind that half our loans are for £200 or less. What we don't have is a store with a specialism, if you like, or a concentration of this type of customer. The yield on the loans is comparable to the H&T loan book. The LTVs are very, very similar. And the collateral asset mix that's held as security for the pledges is almost identical to the mix of collateral held for comparable loans in H&T. Redemption rates, so that's the proportion of people who repay the loan and reclaim their item, is actually higher than at H&T, which you sort of expect because they're business owners financing working capital. But redemption rates are very, very strong. There's an interesting thing, I think, is that the foreign currency revenues generated by that store are roughly double the highest we have generated by our busiest foreign currency store. We believe that's got something to do with the customer base and also the location of the store, because you can park outside, etc. So we believe there was a strong rationale to acquire that business. It met all of our investment hurdles, and our number one strategic priority is to grow and broaden our core pawnbroking business. And Maxcroft helps us to do those things. It is a very large pledge book for a single store. Our largest pledge book in H&T is around about 2 million. So it's a hugely successful business that's been run very conservatively for a very long period of time. And I'm really pleased to have been able to bring it to H&T. So to finish, what I'd like to say is thank everybody for joining. I would characterize 2023 as being a year of very considerable progress with a number of challenges that we had to face through the year. We enter 2024 with really good momentum in the business. And with that, I will finish, and I would be very happy, as would Di, to answer any questions anybody would like to submit. Thank you.
Given the heightened demand for small sum credit, why has the average length of loan not changed?
That's a really good question, whoever asked that one. It's actually reduced. So the long run average is around 108 days, and it's currently 97, so a bit below 100. So on average, a loan is staying on the book for about 10% less time than it would have done. And that's a bit counterintuitive when you consider the economic conditions people have. Our product is a simple daily interest product with no compounding and no fees. So if you use the product for 37 days, you pay 37 days interest. And as I say, there's no compounding, no fees. If you use it for 110 days, you pay 110 days interest. And I think that encourages people, when they can repay their loan, to want to do so, because it means repaying the loan costs them less than it would if they left it there for longer unnecessarily. I would intuitively have expected average time on book to begin to rise by now as economic conditions for people continue to tighten, but there is currently no evidence to support that. I would expect, however, average time on book to move upwards back in the direction of the long run average because of those economic conditions. But as I say, it's actually been rock solid at around 97 or 98 days for 2 years now. And I'm fine with that because that's people using the product as it's intended, i.e. a small sum over a short term. But it's a bit counterintuitive that people are still able to repay the loan in the same timetable as they were a year ago.
And what size could you grow the pledge book to with the current funding structure?
So we believe that there's about 30 million of headroom on the funding as it stands, and we believe that that is sufficient for at least the next couple of years of planned growth.
With the Maxcroft acquisition, were you actually looking for an acquisition, or was it an opportunity that presented itself that was more of an opportunistic action?
No, they approached us about 18 months ago. They're a married couple in their late 50s and wanted to retire. So they approached us. We have a target list of locations where we would want us, where we would like to have a store. If an existing independent business is operating in precisely that location, then we would always be very happy to have a conversation with them about their business. But it's not our primary focus. Our focus is actually more on the location of the store than consolidating for its own sake. But in the case of the Maxcroft business, I think the owners made a decision 2 or 3 years ago that they wanted to think about retirement. And they originally approached us about 18 months ago.
And geographically, it was an area you were looking for.
Well, I wouldn't have opened a store where the Maxcroft store is, actually. The attractiveness of it was the size of the pledge book, the exceptionally high quality of the pledge book, and the very strong FX revenues that are generated from there. I think it's a bit of an exception. We would not normally buy a store that wasn't where we wanted one, but I think this one is quite exceptional in terms of the quality of the pawnbroking business there and the other revenue streams that the store generates.
And does it require a different expertise, the Maxcroft business?
I would say largely the answer is no. The service they offer their customers is exceptional. I mean, we pride ourselves on that as well, but it's exceptional. I think that all of our stores, I think pretty much without exception, actually have some customers who have larger loans and probably use the money for working capital purposes. These aren't big businesses. These would be shopkeepers buying stock or builders funding a contract until they get paid at the end of it. The assets that we are lending against are exactly the same as they are for the smaller loans. It's gold, jewelry, precious metals, and watches. And therefore, the skill set in verifying and valuing those items is the same as it is in our other stores. And obviously, there are control limits and control levels around higher value items. But the assets we're lending against are identical. So the skill set's very similar. It's just a different type of customer using it for a slightly different purpose. We will learn a lot, I think, from Maxcroft over time about how they have established, I mean, there's over 1,000 borrowing customers there. So how they've established such a successful business, focusing on business users, and whether there are lessons we can learn to deploy elsewhere in the business, whether that's got something to do with the location of the store, for example. And it's the same with the foreign currency. We will learn lessons. We won't do anything too quickly. It's best to learn the lessons first and then look to deploy those lessons elsewhere. But the expertise is very, very similar because the assets against which we're lending are identical.
And with that in mind and the difference between your existing business and Maxcroft, someone here is saying, how do you plan to integrate it into H&T without alienating the existing customers?
And the answer to that is we will allow the store to operate. To a degree, it's like any other store that we could acquire. So it won't be integrated into the rest of the business. It will continue to operate in its current location with its current staff, all of whom have happily come over to H&T. And I think it's more the other way. I think it's more that we will learn from them things that we can potentially over time deploy more widely in H&T.
And it may be more to do with the website development, but regarding the acquisition, is the store still trading? I asked because their website started giving errors after the acquisition, and it was while it was eventually redirected to H&T, the shop is not shown under your store locator.
No, so the answer is it will be. We didn't buy the company. We only bought the pawnbroking business and the ancillary revenue that comes from FX. The previous owners own the store, the freehold, and we've taken a lease. We didn't buy MaxProf Securities Limited, and the website, the domain was registered in MaxProf Securities Limited. So it is now redirected, and we've actually opened three. We have three more stores than we had in January, and the store locator is hasn't already been, it's about to be updated.
So what do you think is the optimum size for the retail estate?
That's a really good question. We've got a target list of about 170 places where we think we would like to have a store. I'm not suggesting that for a minute that we would do all of those. I could see us potentially with up to 350, but that would still only be at the 12, 15 a year. We don't want to open too many stores too quickly. We want to make sure we open them, they're successful, and we don't want to open stores and then have to close them again. So it will be measured. Of that increase, the majority would be infills. So this would be a town or a city where we have a store already. I can give an example. Well, Luton is a good example where we have a very successful store, but the data would suggest that we're only actually serving a proportion of the potential population there, and therefore we at some point will probably look to open a second store in Luton. So I think the majority would be those. They're actually easier and quicker to get successful because we will tend to have a manager that runs like Anchor on the front page with Cardiff, but somebody there that could take on a second store. I think that the minority of them will be greenfield sites because they can be a bit more difficult to support because we always con people when we open the store. So I could see us with up to 350, but that would be over a number of years.
And how important do you think your online digital channel will be going forward?
Well, the thing about the online is that half, it remains the case that half of all of our online purchases are viewed in store by the customer before they actually buy the item. You can kind of understand that. If I was going to buy a pre-owned watch, I'd probably want to see it first before I actually purchase it. So this isn't click and collect, this is click and view. And what we'll do if the item is of a value or above, we'll send it to a convenience store so you can go and look at it. But I think for our retail business, the online journey, we will continue to refine and improve, and I'd like to see that continue to grow. It's around about 20% of our sales at the moment. I think it has the potential to grow beyond that, but we are and will remain a stores-based, human-to-human, service-based business, and I don't see it overtaking stores-based retail anytime soon, but I do anticipate more customers using it and potentially more customers buying through the basket rather than doing click and view. So it will continue to grow. We need to keep making it better and better and better. And it's our shop window in many respects to people that perhaps don't know H&T. So I think it will continue to grow.
Great. Thank you very much. And on that, can you give a bit more detail on the website revamp, i.e. the total cost? And is it expensed or does it sit on the balance sheet?
Sure, with pleasure. So there's two parts to our spend on technology. One is the website and the other is our newly developed system, which we called Evo, which is the platform that we deployed the first phase of last year. And we're busy with the second phase this year, and then phase three will come after that. So those costs are capitalized. We spend in the region of between £1.5 and £2 million a year on those costs. And we're about halfway through a probably 6-year project in terms of how much more we will have to go to be able to get the final phase delivered, but they are capitalized. The costs with regards to the websites, they are part of day-to-day support, but to the extent that it is an improvement, yes, they are included in that £1.5 million I've mentioned that's on the balance sheet. Now, I wanted to say the term in the, you know, the life of the use of life of that that asset, because that would be probably the second part of your question, would be how long are we depreciating that over? And that is over a 15-year life.
And what are your assumptions on costs and particularly staff wages for the coming year?
So cost, as Chris mentioned slightly earlier, is this year we've achieved cost growth of 11%, which we worked really hard for. We expect it to be the same region for next year. We are a predominantly fixed-based business, and 60% of what we spend is on employee costs. Now, we are not a minimum wage employer and we won't become one. However, all of our salaries are benchmarked at that as the starting point, and we then maintain the differentials above it. So for us, the biggest driver of those increases is the increase that we have in the minimum wage base, which is in the region of 10%. So that is why we're going to see our costs go into next year with that double-digit growth. We work hard on the other costs. So if we look at our electricity and our gas, we have a contract in place, which we've already had for 2 years, which is at a fixed rate. We've extended that for another 2 years. So we won't be subject to any volatility in that market. And we continue to have discussions and negotiations with our suppliers to make sure that we get the best possible prices we can do to the extent that we use them.
And I believe you've increased your lending rates. Do you think it'll impact demand for your products and particularly attracting new customers?
So for lending rates, that effectively is the interest rate that we charge. We have increased them. It's the first time we've done so for many years, actually. And I did think very long and hard before doing so, but we felt the time was right to do it. We actually started the process in the second half of last year and finished it at the beginning of this year with another change that we made. It has not, as far as we can see, had any impact on demand. January was a record month for lending demand, and halfway through March, if it continues at the current pace, will be a record month again, although clearly we're only halfway through. So I don't think it's had an impact on demand. In terms of whether it has an impact on redemption rates, it'll take some time to see that flow through. But if I look at the early signs from customers who have used the product before and are coming back and using it again, I don't anticipate it having an impact on redemption rates. So currently it has not affected demand. That said, we won't be increasing the rates again because I want to give it time to flow all the way through the end-to-end process to just make absolutely sure that there's no knock-on impact on other aspects of the journey, which can take 9 or 10 months at the time from the point at which you lend to the point at which an item that's not redeemed goes through the auction process and ends up in our inventory. And I just want to make absolutely sure before we think about moving rates again or whether we move rates again, that it doesn't affect any of the metrics through the process. But it hasn't affected demand, not thus far.
And could you give a little bit of clarity around your progressive dividend policy? I always thought this meant it would largely mirror earnings per share growth, but it has recently lagged this by some margin.
Great. So our dividend policy is progressive and ensuring that we always maintain a 2x cover. We have slowed the growth of the dividend this year, although we're still at a 13% growth in the dividend. As we grow the business and as we invest further in our pledge book and into our capital expenditure for our stores, both new and existing stores, for us, it's a capital allocation decision as to where to best deploy our funds. So our policy is progressive and it has grown at a slower rate, and it would probably continue to be progressive at a rate slightly slower than what we have seen in our earnings per share, so we can deploy into our business.
And a question on capital allocation. You paid 1.8 times the pledge book and over 16 times profit for Maxcroft. Would that money not have been better spent on buying back your own shares, given that they're trading at less than 8 times earnings?
So we didn't pay 16 times profit for Maxcroft. We didn't buy Maxcroft Securities Limited. We only acquired the pawnbroking pledge book, the revenue that they generate from the FX revenues, and we took a lease on the store and brought the staff over. So we did not buy the entity. If the only measure is multiple of book, then yes, we did pay 1.8 times. It's worth pointing out, though, that if you put our multiple on the FX revenue, or if you apply a value to the FX revenue, then that reduces the multiple of book. It passed all of our investment hurdles, and it underpins and supports our key strategic aim, which is to grow and broaden the pledge book. And what that business does is something that we're seeing more of elsewhere in the business, and therefore it's something that we think we can leverage across the business. But the acquisition met all of our requirements in terms of returns and IRR, etc. But we did not pay 16 times the revenue or the profit that we generated by the business that we bought, because we didn't buy Max Groff Securities Limited. We just bought the trading assets of the business. Our aim is to grow our business, because growing the business, pawnbroking in particular, underpins future earnings growth. So people often ask us about different options around capital allocation. Our priority right now is the growth of the business.
And when you raise capital, you said you'd open 15 to 20 stores a year, and now that target's been reduced. Why is that?
We don't have a target as such. We do have a list of locations where we want a store. We will only open the store if we can get a unit in precisely the location that we want to be in. And that has been quite challenging, actually. I could see us opening 15 or more stores a year. We've guided to 8 to 12 for 2024, because I know where we are looking, and I know what the availability of units is likely to be. The other side of this particular coin is that the growth in the pawnbroking pledge book has been higher than was anticipated at the time that we raised the equity in 2022. And again, this is back to where is the best place to deploy our available funding and our available resources. And the priority is the growth in the pledge book and the other things that we do too, but mainly the growth in the pledge book. Opening the shops in and of itself is not the number one priority. So we've guided to 8 to 12. It might be a bit more than that. It won't be less than 8.
And that's the end of questions. Chris, do you have any closing remarks?
No, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. The beauty of these things is you never actually know what the questions you're going to get. So I really appreciate everybody for taking the time and the trouble to join. And I wish you all an excellent weekend. And thank you very much. And we will do another one of these at the half year, when we announce our half year results in the summer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.